Truth Revolution.
Welcome to Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason meet. I'm Pastor Dave. That's Pastor Jeff. We're from Revolution Church in Salina, Kansas.
Today we're talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, but specifically we're going to look at some of the martyrdom of the apostles. So we're going to read a book. We're going to respond to some atheist videos or an atheist video. We like to do this. I mean, it's Easter. Happy Easter today.
So, happy Easter to you, too.
I'm glad you're joining us on Easter or shortly after Easter, whenever you're listening to this. You know, one of the things we talk about on the show a lot is the acronym FEAT, F-E-A-T. That was designed by a guy named Hank Hanegraaff. This acronym shows that Jesus Christ really did rise from the dead. Fatal torment. Jesus really died. Empty tomb, right? All the governments, all the people agreed that the tomb of Jesus was empty shortly after his death, two and a half, three days later. And then A stands for the appearances of Jesus Christ. He showed up and appeared to all these people. And then the T, the transformation of all the people who saw Jesus, is huge. And right. Some of them even died because of how they were transformed. Now, we don't bank everything on the fact that the disciples were martyred. We bank on the fact that everyone who saw and knew Jesus after the appearance transformed. They changed their life. They gave up their customs. They changed everything. They gave up their finances. They changed everything because they believed they had saw the risen Jesus. But part of that is a lot of people, we would say a lot of people, died believing they saw the Jesus risen from the dead.
Right.
And they died as martyrs, right? With the government saying, hey, we're going to kill you for saying this. And they said, well, I believe it anyway. And then they died. That's a fairly popular argument. Some people take it a lot further than we would, though. Okay, so this is a clip from the Atheist Experience and or the Atheist Voice on YouTube. And this is a caller who called in, and he was trying to convince them that Jesus rose from the dead. So just check this out.
The reason why is because I've been told, I've been told, I'm not going to beat about the bush. I've been told that Jesus' 10 out of the 12 disciples died when they'd seen Jesus rise from the dead. Now, I'm thinking if someone's willing to die for something that they've seen, then it should give us a clear proof of a story, because Nero mentions Peter dying for what he saw.
Okay, so he talks about 10 out of the 12 apostles died. And periodically, I'll say things like all the apostles died except for one or two. Now, if we want to get nitty and gritty, and what we're going to do today is we're going to talk nitty and gritty details. Because a lot of those, when we say, you know, a number of the apostles died, we're talking about oral passing down tradition.
Yep.
We're talking about, this isn't like the state of Texas executed somebody and there's a lot of documentation.
Right.
So this guy comes in, he says to these people, hey, 10 out of the 12 died and this is proof. Well, these guys on the Atheist Voice know what the data is, and they know that a lot of it's oral tradition, and so they're going to pin them down. This is what they say.
So I recently had a conversation on Unbelievable with Sean McDowell, who did his entire doctrinal dissertation on this. Do you know who Sean McDowell is, or his father Josh McDowell?
No, but
okay. So Josh McDowell, he wrote Evidence That Demands a Verdict, and he's very, very well known. And his son Sean did his doctrinal dissertation, probably the biggest doctrinal dissertation on the fate of the martyrs, fate of the apostles, that exists. Now, in Sean's own words, only two of the 12, you had this exactly flipped. There is good evidence for only two of the 12, Peter and James, son of Zebedee. Those are the only two that we can have any level of confidence that what we know in history isn't just legend. In Sean's own words, he doesn't know where legend ends and where truth begins for 10 of the 12 apostles. So you have that exactly flipped. Only two do we have good.
Okay, I didn't know that. Sorry about that. I didn't know that. But if that's the case, if that's what the scholars are saying, why isn't that not being preached? Why did the vicars not say, oh, well, actually, we've made a mistake. You know what? We've made a mistake. It's actually two, not 10.
So there you go. And this guy now is suddenly disillusioned, right?
Right.
It's like, why are the preachers saying this?
Right. And it should give us pause before we start putting a lot of information like that out there because of situations like that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, sometimes the wording we use, we're careful, it's likely that the 10 out of 12 died or things we say likely or things like that. But hopefully this show and the way we talk about it or later on from now on, we'll be clear about this. Now they go on and they basically say, we really only have evidence that two This is what always gets me about stuff like this. We only have evidence at two. Never recanted for the faith and died as martyrs. And so, bah, you know what? You're wrong.
Right.
Okay, well, we have evidence that two of them died as martyrs after having seen the risen Jesus Christ. And for 2,000 years later, that's pretty darn good evidence. But what we're going to do, he mentioned Sean McDowell and Evidence That Demands a Verdict. We're going to go through a chapter in the book, Evidence Demands a Verdict. And this was written by Josh McDowell, Sean McDowell. We've had Sean McDowell on the show before. Yeah. So he's been here. We've talked to him. This is a great book. We've recommended it before. If you don't have this book, you should get the book. You should read the book. But we're going to read chapter 13 for you. It's a little tedious. You're going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it. We're going to read it and discuss it. And this is about the martyrdom of the apostles. So what is real? Is it really true that only two of the apostles that we have evidence for? Well, let's just start out. He says, the willingness of the apostles to suffer and die for the faith is one of the most commonly cited arguments for the resurrection. However, scholars debate both the historicity of the apostles' martyrdom and the apologetic significance of their martyrdoms. In other words, does it even matter?
Right.
Like, do we even need this argument in one of our in our tool belt? Because we have lots of other reasons to prove Jesus rose from the dead. But he says, and to what extent does the martyrdom count as evidence for the resurrection? In this chapter, we'll explore and answer these questions. Much of this chapter relies upon my, Sean's, academic book, The Fate of the Apostles, Examining the Martyrdom Accounts of the Closest Followers of Jesus. So that's the one that the guy was referring to in the video. I actually haven't read that one. We've done a lot of other studies on that stuff, but I would presume it's really good. Okay, he goes on. He says, the apostles spent between 1.5 and 3 years with Jesus during his public ministry, okay? They were expecting him to proclaim his, expecting him to proclaim his kingdom on earth. Although disillusioned as his untimely death, they became the first witnesses of the risen Jesus and they endured persecution. Okay. That's really important, right? We know they endured persecution. Whether or not they endured martyrdom is not as big of a deal, but this is what we're talking about today is the martyrdom. Okay. They signed their testimony, so to speak, with their martyrdom in their blood. The strength of their conviction, marked by their willingness to die, indicates they did not fabricate these claims. Rather, without exception, they actually believed Jesus to have risen from the dead. While in and of themselves, these facts prove neither the truth of the resurrection in particular, nor Christianity as a whole, they do demonstrate the apostles' sincerity of belief, lending credibility to their claims about the veracity of the resurrection, which is fundamental to the case for Christianity. In other words, we read this next part, Dave?
Yeah. Their willingness in the face, the willingness to face persecution and martyrdom indicates more than any other conceivable course, their sincere conviction that after rising from the dead, Jesus indeed appeared to them.
That's right. So what he's saying here is, hey, these guys really believed it.
Right.
Right. And if they actually died saying, we believe this, and someone said, we're going to kill you if you say Jesus rose from the dead, and they continued to preach that,
right,
and then they died for it. Like, that's really good evidence that
absolutely
they actually 100% believed that they had seen Jesus risen from the dead. Okay, that's the claim. It doesn't mean Jesus did, but it means that they believed it.
Absolutely.
Absolute sincerely. Yeah. Yeah, then he goes on, he says, scholars often point to the willingness of the apostles to suffer and die as evidence for their sincere belief, right? Like we just talked about. We're going to jump to the next part, clarifying the argument. In her book, The Myth of Persecution, University of Notre Dame professor Candida Moss claims Christians like to think of their martyrs as unique. The fact that early Christians are willing to die for their beliefs has been a sign of the inherent truth of the Christian message. Christianity is true, it said, because only Christians have martyrs. There are two problems with this formulation of her argument. First, as I demonstrate, there are many martyrs outside Christianity. I don't claim that only Christians have martyrs. Have we ever said that only Christians have martyrs?
No.
No, we've never said that. It says the death of others for their religious causes in no way undermine the evidential significance of the fate of the apostles. Right?
Right.
That's just the way it is. The second, the apostles' willingness to die for their beliefs does not demonstrate the inherent truth of Christian message. We haven't said that. We've never said because they died for their faith, Christianity must be true.
Right.
We're only saying what?
Right. That their belief was such that they were willing to go to their death to say, yes, this happened.
Exactly. And he goes on, he says, the apostles could have been mistaken. but their willingness to die as martyrs establishes their unmistakable sincerity.
Absolutely.
The apostles were not liars. Rather, they believed they had seen the risen Jesus. They were willing to die for this claim, and many did die for it. And that's a really important distinction to understand, right? Yeah. We're not saying we're the only ones who have martyrs. We're not saying that even their martyrdom proved Christianity, only that it proves they really believe they saw Jesus alive.
It makes a compelling argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't say, well, because of this, then this. It's like, no, we're talking about people who are witness to an event that when faced with death, like saying, it's like, well, I just saw an accident out front. And you say, well, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, I did. Well, I'm going to kill you if you don't retract that. Well,
yeah,
I did see it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean,
you might retract it even if you had seen it.
Right, because it's no big deal to me.
Because you don't want to die.
But the big deal to them was one of the things that we look at in the Christian faith is that they believe that they saw the risen Christ, God in the flesh.
Yeah, so they're willing to die for it.
Yeah.
All right, then he goes on. Were the first Christians actually persecuted for their faith? Persecution against the first Christians provides a helpful setting for evaluating the likelihood of martyrdoms of individual apostles. Even though the persecution was sporadic and local, there is evidence that the public proclamation of the faith could be costly. Mm-hmm. Okay, in other words, there's a lot of historic evidence that Christians were persecuted early on.
Right.
Really just drastic amounts of it. And we're not saying Christians were persecuted in every place they were at, all the time throughout history. That's not what we're saying. But we're saying there is evidence that even very early on, different Christians were persecuted in different areas at different times. Right. He says, for instance, John the Baptist was imprisoned and beheaded. Jesus was crucified. Stephen was stoned to death after his witness before the Sanhedrin. That's Acts 6 to 8. Herod Agrippa killed James, the brother of John, Acts 12, which led to the departure of the 12 from Jerusalem. The first statewide persecution of Christians under Nero, as reported by Tacitus is an ancient historian. Mm-hmm. He wrote Annals, and historians trust Tacitus. And he recorded this that Nero had done in Suetonius, also talking about Nero. The apostles publicly proclaimed the resurrection of their crucified criminal with full awareness of what their actions might cost them. The apostles should not have been surprised if they faced persecution. Jesus taught that his followers would suffer for the sake of righteousness and be killed as Israel had killed the prophets for their proclamation of the name of Jesus before men. Right? In other words, Jesus said to them very early on, hey, y'all going to die for this.
Right.
You're going to suffer for this. Y'all are going to have problems because of this. And that's true. That happened. Okay, there's plenty of historic evidence. Suffering was a central theme in the life and teachings of Paul. And as discussed in length in The Fate of the Apostles, his other research project, the expectation of suffering and persecution is a central theme through the New Testament, Old Testament, and pre-Christian Jewish literature such as 2 Maccabees, which we didn't include in our Bibles, but right. It's interesting to read nonetheless. There was an anticipation during the first century AD that prophets would suffer and die at the hands of their own people as well as secular authorities. So, suffering is a central theme throughout the first epistle of Peter, especially chapters 2 through 4. Where he gives specific advice for facing testing and trials. In other words, like the Bible even records Peter writing to people saying, hey, you guys are suffering. You're going through all kinds of trials, and here's how you handle the situation.
Right.
The letter opens with this emphasis upon the believer's living hope to the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, where he frames this vibrant encouragement to them, his emphasis upon the joy, and he goes on here for a little bit. And then he gets into like, okay, let's talk about the actual evidence for the martyrs, okay? And this is what we're going to do. We're going to look at some of the historical data. We're going to talk about each apostle that we have good evidence for. You watched the documentary last night.
I did. They talked about the two Jameses, James, the brother of Jesus, and the other James.
So does that
mean? Yeah, and then they talked about Peter, and then they talked about Paul.
Yeah, which are the four that we have really good evidence for. This guy had said that there's only evidence for two. But we're going to get to that in just a minute, why he says that. Okay, so let's look down here. Okay, a general claims for the martyrdom of the apostles. We get into to his first part here. The guy named Polycarp wrote a letter to the Philippians. Now, Polycarp was an early Christian leader. He wasn't an apostle, but he was like second generation.
Right.
Okay. He says, therefore, I urge all of you to obey the word of righteousness and to practice all endurance, which you also observed with your own eyes, not only in the most fortunate Ignatius. Now, Ignatius was even before Polycarp. Okay, so like there's the apostles, and then Ignatius was like converted by the Apostle Paul, I think. I can't remember off the top of my head now. Ignatius was like converted by like one of the apostles and was trained by one of the apostles. And then Polycarp came like right after Ignatius. Right. And so Polycarp here is talking about Ignatius's martyrdom. So Ignatius, Zosimus, and Rufus, other fairly well-known early Christians, but also in others who lived among you. And here it is, in Paul himself and the other apostles. You should be convinced that none of them acted in vain. What did what in vain?
Lost their life in vain?
Yeah, right? But in faith and righteousness, and that they are in the place they deserved with the Lord, with whom they also suffered. For they did not love the present age. They loved the one who died for us and who was raised by God for our sakes. Okay, so this is interesting because Polycarp says this, right? So you've got the apostles, you got Ignatius, you got Polycarp. Like he was like right there.
Right.
This is like if your parent died and you're their son, and then your friend who saw you go through this is writing about the fact that like you died,
right,
and they died, and he's saying, and they didn't die for, like he saw this stuff happen. He saw you die, you saw them die. I mean,
right.
Well, he was so close to it.
Yeah, and he specifically though also says that Paul himself and the other apostles.
Yeah.
Now that says if it would have been just two, it'd have been Paul and the other apostle.
Yeah.
So now we know that there's at least three, right?
Well, you would think.
Yeah.
That's certainly how I would understand that, right?
It's English.
It's English.
Yeah.
And then we get to now this is from the fourth century. Okay. So this is a little bit further down the road, but this is Syrian father Aphrahat in a writing called the Demonstration 21 of Persecution. Great and excellent is the martyrdom of Jesus. He surpassed in affliction and in confession all who were before or after. And after him was the faithful martyr Stephen, whom the Jews stoned, Simon Peter also, and Paul were perfect martyrs. And James and John walked in the footsteps of their master Christ. In the footsteps of their master Christ probably means they died too.
Right.
And others of the apostles hereafter in diverse places confessed and proved true martyrs. So here you have this guy, you know, a couple centuries later, which is still fairly close. He's writing and he's saying, okay, who were the apostles? Well, Simon, definitely, Paul, James, and John. So there's four people. Also, he says, and other apostles
right.
proved true martyrs. So you have multiple you know, writings that
so we have at least seven.
Yeah.
Because of the other apostles.
What, wait, how do you get to seven?
Six.
Oh, because you're saying other apostles, yeah, apostles means at least
right.
two
yeah,
more.
Yeah.
So that he listed four
yeah.
plus two more. And now someone's saying, but Paul's not an apostle. We're going to get to that. So just chill. Okay. So I told them to just chill. Like they're mad at us. And I can sense it. All right. Now we get to the next part. Noted skeptic and New Testament scholar Bart Ehrman notes, Polycarp, you know, the historian, Christian, Polycarp shows that he knows that, like Paul and other apostles, Ignatius had already been martyred for his faith. Okay, Ehrman, he's a skeptic, right? He admits this. These two passages certainly don't prove the apostles died as martyrs, right? It doesn't right. prove it. In fact, most of the apostles are not even named, and it's not clear exactly what Polycarp means by apostle, since he includes Paul.
Mm-hmm. True.
Which I kind of would like to include Paul in that list, mm-hmm. but okay. Because Paul, I think Paul includes himself in the list of apostles.
Right.
But that's a whole different discussion. All right. Sorry. Okay. So Paul was not one of the 12, but and he includes Aphrat, seems to indicate that John was martyred along with his brother James, which does raise questions about the reliability and source of the tradition. But these two references do provide somewhat early evidence for a tradition that the apostles were in fact martyred.
Right.
Right. What is the point of sharing this early record here? And there's more records than this, but the point is to show, hey, it didn't take very long. It's not like 20 years ago we started saying,
right.
I think they were all killed. We're talking 1,600, 1,700, 1,900, 1,940 years.
Right.
Christians have been saying the apostles have been martyred.
Yeah. And only that, it's like the documentation of even just in Rome, the documentation of Christians being killed for their faith in great numbers is well documented in history.
Yeah.
So why would we just stop there? You know, well, the apostles didn't get it. You know, they were probably the most vocal out of all the people that were spreading the word at that point. So yeah. Why doesn't it make sense that maybe they would be ones that were gone after even harder?
That's exactly right. Yeah. I think a skeptic, you know, would probably say, well, maybe because they're the ones who were claiming they saw Jesus risen. Mm-hmm. And if they weren't telling the truth, then maybe some of them did recant. You know, if they didn't all die as martyrs,
right.
But the funny thing is you don't have any of that evidence to the negative. No. And it's hard to prove a negative, but you don't have anything that shows. So we do have evidence that some of them were martyred for their faith. We have zero evidence that any of them ever recanted.
Yeah. But the simple fact of the matter is that every time we add one more name to that list, mm-hmm. and, an apostle or a, you know, where it says apostles, we've added two more. Every time we add somebody else to that list, that the weight of it gets stronger.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. So now we're going to look at the evidence for the individual apostles. Okay. So here's Peter. The traditional view is that Peter was crucified in Rome during the reign of Nero between AD 64 and 67. Crucified upside down, in fact. Mm-hmm. The earliest evidence for the martyrdom of Peter comes from John 21, which was written no later than 30 years after Peter's death and possibly before AD 70. Most commentators agree that this passage predicts the martyrdom of Peter. Okay, right? This is where they're saying, Peter, you're going to die. Ehrman concludes, it is clear, again, this is the skeptic, it's clear that Peter is being told that he will be executed, that he won't die of natural causes, and that this will be the death of a martyr. Other early evidence for Peter's martyrdom can be found in writings such as Clement of Rome, Ignatius, the Apocalypse of Peter, the Ascension of Isaiah, the Acts of Peter, the Apocryphon of James, Dionysius of Corinth, Muratorian Canon, and Tertullian. The early consistent and unanimous testimony is that Peter died as a martyr. Okay, so we're not going to talk about that much. It's pretty unanimous.
Right.
Even the atheists agree. All right, Paul. The traditional view is that Paul was beheaded in Rome during the reign of Nero. Nero's a bad dude, man. Mm-hmm. The scripture does not directly state his martyrdom, but there are hints in both Acts 2 and 2 Timothy 4 that Paul knew his death was pending, right? Paul talks about it. The first extra-biblical evidence is found in 1 Clement 5:5-7, in which was written AD 95 or something, in which Paul is described as suffering greatly for his faith and then being set free from this world, being transported up to the holy place, having become the greatest example of endurance. That means they killed him.
Right.
While details regarding the manner of his fate are lacking, the immediate context strongly implies that Clement was referring to the martyrdom of Paul. Other early evidences for martyrdom of Paul can be found in Ignatius, Polycarp, Dionysius of Corinth, Irenaeus, the Acts of Paul, and Tertullian. Again, the early consistent unanimous testimony is that Paul died as a martyr.
Right.
Pretty much everybody agrees with that. Like the video you watched would have said Paul.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now, we get to a couple that are a little less sure. These are the two Jameses, okay? So there are only a few apocryphal accounts surrounding James, the son of Zebedee. The Acts of Saints in India reports a tradition that he went to India along with Peter. The Apostolic History of Abdias, 6th and 7th centuries, so it's a ways after, tells a story of James and his interaction with two pagan magicians who eventually confess Christ. The most likely reason apocryphal accounts about James are rare is because his martyrdom in Judea was so firmly entrenched in the early church and limited in the trajectory of such stories. In other words, everybody knew it. Everybody told the same story. It wasn't like, we should probably write this down and make a record of this. Right. It was everybody knew it.
Yeah.
You
know? Like the saying, that which is known doesn't need to be discussed.
Yeah. The brevity of the account may be unexpected, but it does serve to strengthen in its reliability. No legendary details creep into the narrative, which is important, right? It's not like the story grows and expands through time. In fact, quite the opposite is true. The account reads like an official execution. There's no good reason to doubt Luke's version of the fate of James, the son of Zebedee. So Although some people would say, hey, this isn't true. Like, James is probably true. Like, we got really good evidence. Now, James, brother of Jesus. The earliest evidence for the death of James comes from Josephus in his Antiquities. Unlike the Testimonium Flavianum, this passage is largely undisputed by scholars. It allows the dating of James's execution to AD 62, since Josephus places his death between the terms of two Roman procurators, Festus and Albinus. According to this account, the high priest Annas had James stoned to death. Okay, the death of James is also reported by Hegesippus, Clement of Alexandria. He lists a few others here. The case for the martyrdom of James is strengthened by the fact that there are Christian, Hegesippus, Clement of Alexandria, Jewish, Josephus, and Gnostic, First Apocalypse of James, sources that affirm its occurrence within a century and a half of the event. So he basically lists a bunch of different things here. It's widespread. It's a pretty consistent tradition of what happened to James. So we're pretty accurate. We're pretty sure. Very high level of confidence about James, the son of Zebedee, James, the brother of Jesus, Paul, and Peter.
Right.
Now, a reminder of what they said on the show. They said from the Atheist Voice,
there is good evidence for only two of the 12, Peter and James, son of Zebedee. Those are the only two that we can have any level of confidence that what we know in history isn't just legend.
Okay, so one of the problems is when he tells this guy who called in, the guy's like, 10 to 12 apostles died. And the guy's like, no, there's only evidence for two. He says a little later in the show, like, there's evidence that other people died, but he's limiting it to those 12 apostles. Yeah. So Paul, he wouldn't include in the list, even though Paul wrote most of the New Testament books of the Bible. Paul, I would consider an apostle, but he wouldn't consider Paul an apostle. So he's like, Paul doesn't count. What? I'm sorry, but Paul counts.
Paul has to count just for reason of inclusion. He included himself as one of the forefathers or one of the fathers of the church, because he wrote half of the New Testament.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't disclude him. And he did see the risen Christ, even although it wasn't before the ascension. Mm-hmm. It was afterwards when he was running all over the world trying to stamp out Christianity, which is another story in and of itself.
Right, exactly. We go on here. They talk about Thomas. The traditional story is that Thomas traveled to India where he was speared to death. Although some Western scholars are skeptical, the Eastern Church has consistently held that Thomas ministered in India and died there as a martyr. I'm not going to read the rest of this, but the basic concept for Thomas is it was an oral tradition. And the like you said, the Eastern Church has firmly believed that Thomas died. And well, he does say down here, well, there's not any written history in India prior to the arrival of the Portuguese in the 16th century. Okay, that's important to remember.
Yeah.
They don't have written history. Okay, so there was no way to write it and record it. But the oral tradition, which is relatively reliable, because it's not like us telling stories of gossip, right? Oral history is, I'm going to pass history down to you. And so, you know, it's relatively reliable and it's fairly consistent that Thomas died. Although we have to concede, we don't have the historical writings like we do for a lot of the other ones.
Right.
Let's talk about Andrew. The earliest written of the martyrdom of Andrew comes from the Acts of Andrew, which is written 150 to 210. The text concludes with Andrew speaking directly to the cross of his crucifixion as though it were a living person, and then demanding the executioners kill him. You know, it's a little spectacular, right? Many later writer accounts of Andrew's death exist, but they all appear to have originated with the Acts of Andrew. As a whole, the Acts of Andrew received mixed reception in the early church, ranging from condemnation from Pope Innocent I to adaptation for popular piety, and it goes on. While these contain legendary accretion, they also preserve the most likely fate for the respective apostle, including a natural death for John. What's he saying here? He's saying it includes some real history.
Right.
And so it's probable that Andrew really did die as a martyr, even though they kind of built up some other stories around it. All right, so there you have it. There are lots and lots of stories of martyrdom in history. If you want to learn more about some of them, get this book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, by Josh McDowell and Sean McDowell. You can listen to our show with Sean McDowell on truthrevolution.tv.
We'll link it.
And so get the book, though. There's more to this chapter that we didn't have time to get to. Really, really good stuff. I hope you weren't bored to death by us reading a story to you. I found it interesting.
It was interesting to me too. So
hopefully you like it.
Yeah.
All right. Come on out to Revolution Church if you haven't been before. We're in Salina. We meet on Sunday mornings at 3 different service times. Go to our website, revo.church, to find out exactly when and where we meet. Revo.church, Dave. What's the website address?
Revo.church. That's R-E-V-O.church.
All right. We'll see you next month on truthrevolution.tv.